He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners for this week's show on cars and various other subjects. There's a lot going on. We've talked a lot on many of our shows about the electric car world, and there's been the pros and the cons and all that. And as we are now into what, our second year or third year of the electric car world, trying to make a big inroad on our car industry, there's a lot of rethinking going on by various companies about when their new versions of electric vehicles should actually be ready to be able to be bought. And while some people are moving ahead full speed, like Cadillac with their Lyriq V-Series EV coming on soon, others are slowing the course of putting new electric-only models on the road, apparently preferring to stay with either combustion engines totally or the hybrid versions of the of these vehicles with both combustion and battery capability. It's not surprising that this is probably happening, but there is no question that even though it may be slowing, the march to electric purchases is increasing, at least by several people's thoughts and some articles in the American world. And I think Jay can probably support this in the European world, who may be way far ahead of us because they've got a lot more incentives, significant incentives, for people to switch to electric a lot faster than we in the American world seem to be doing. Jay, you want to comment?
Well, I think, yes.
That's a good answer.
There are more smaller electric vehicles. You know, manufacturing an electric car has always been difficult, or it's proven to be difficult to make them be profitable. So, and this is why any trend, new technology, you always, you know, technology trickles down, right? So you start with selling expensive vehicles in limited numbers, and then technology trickles down, and then they get mass produced, and everybody gets to benefit from the technology,
right?
Whether it's electric or other features. I mean, look at all the safety features that are mandatory on cars now were optional on high-end $100,000 cars, you know, 10 years ago.
And then they became standard on those cars, and they trickled down to the less expensive range.
So,
right?
The question is, are we going to see cheaper electric vehicles here in the U.S.? Yes, I think so.
I think so,
Volkswagen
too.
Volkswagen is coming out with in Europe they have the ID.3, which is a Golf-like electric vehicle, and Volkswagen is now coming out with a smaller electric vehicle.
Less
and
expensive,
I forget what
of course.
It's going to be called. They have high hopes for the European market, but again, here in the U.S., we're left with our big, heavy vehicles, whether electric or ICE, and so those smaller vehicles, electric vehicles, are you know, so far have been a flop. I mean,
right.
Look at GM's Chevy Bolt, of which I was a big fan, no longer exists as such. And
well, the new one's about to come out, the Bolt. Or are you talking about the Bolt with the V?
But in 2018, you could buy a $20,000 electric vehicle. You could
buy a
Chevy Bolt in 2018. You and I drove one back then. That's like 6 or 7 years ago.
And the dealers could not sell them, Jay, and you saw bargain after bargain show up on Chevy lots, and we discussed that back in those days, which is
now seven years old. But the problem hasn't changed.
The dealers
have not changed either, and they're just stuck in their old ways, and that's why they're having all the problems, or some of them are having the problems they're having. The Chevy Bolt you and I tested way back when was parked in the back of the lot, and all the Silverado pickup trucks were in the front, and the Yukons and the Suburbans, and the electric vehicle was nowhere to be seen.
And they were not mentioned when you walked into a showroom unless you specifically asked to see it, because
correct.
The salespeople weren't interested in trying to sell you an electric vehicle either, because that wasn't the predominant way they were going to make money for the dealership and themselves. So,
and dealers, dealers saw electric vehicles as being a menace because dealers make most of their money on the shop and on repairs and maintenance, and they saw the electric vehicle
taking that away from them.
So being a no maintenance or much lesser maintenance requiring vehicle.
We have noted that a couple of times on this show, you specifically, and it is true today. It is as true today, if not truer, than it was back then when it was still very true. You've got some manufacturers are slowing the march to the full electric level or models of their vehicles, and many are staying with the hybrid or increasing their levels of hybrid vehicles, whether it be plug-in hybrids or just hybrids, and which aren't plug-ins and don't require the plug-in charger at your house and or anywhere else you might drive to get a recharge. On the other hand, I mean, they've got various things going on to try to make you want to buy electric more. I think the intelligence level of the buying public is increasing to help increase electric sales. I think people realize that it is perfectly good and maybe smart to have an all-electric vehicle in their fleet of cars, which is usually one or two, if they are not big-time, long mileage driving drivers. Because you can certainly run a electric vehicle all year long and lifelong if you don't go more than 250 miles a day.
I have to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Speaking of electric vehicles and dead electric vehicles, I just saw another Fisker drive right by me here I'm in the New York area right now. And this is not the first time. I've seen two or three Fiskers only here in New York. So they managed to sell a few of them before they went belly up.
They are no longer in production, are they? They are bankrupt.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. And it's kind of a shame because it is a very good-looking vehicle. It's a very good-looking SUV.
What I wonder is how long are they required to be able to make warranty fixes on their cars? Do they have to keep an inventory of parts even though they're bankrupt, or are they totally out of the repair and maintenance business and it has to be done by somebody else?
There's all sorts of consumer protection laws.
Consumer protection laws, but
they're bankrupt. They're bankrupt. It's not the first time they go belly up.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen. But I just thought I'd mention the car because it's a good-looking car.
It is a good-looking car.
And I made this point in a conversation we had earlier. You cannot have a manufacturer with a one-model single-model lineup. It just whether you're launching a new brand or you have an existing brand, if it comes down to one or two vehicles in the brand, I'm doom and gloom, and you know that. And I'm telling you, those brands are dead, and we've seen it before. And the hard part with the electric vehicles is that, you know, you start a new car company, whether it's Tesla, Rivian, Lucid, or Fisker, you have to be able to put out several models out very quickly.
Well,
and they have to be good.
And Rivian is getting ready to bring down some cheaper models, and we're looking forward to seeing those. Correct, Jay?
Who's that making cheaper models?
Rivian.
Rivian. Yes. Well, they're making. I don't know how cheaper they're going to be. We're not talking cheap.
No. But let's say $10,000 or $15,000 below the current starting levels of their vehicles.
I mean R1 and R2, the RS1 is the big SUV. Which, by the way, I don't think looks that big, and I think it looks awesome. And I know it's an awesome vehicle.
Well, I know owners of them love them.
Yeah.
They're
cold. On a side note of a side note, the Rivian just came out with an intermediate model for their SUV and their truck, I think. And it seems to be the automotive industry seems to think that it is the best one of the bunch so far. It's not a high performance. It's a three motor, not a four motor, but an all wheel drive vehicle. I think it has the longest range. It's a little, and it's priced between
30 and 50.
No. We're still talking $70,000-$80,000.
Oh, we are. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway,
that goal is in the I just gave you, or maybe 40 to 60, is in the is on the radar of some manufacturers of electric vehicles. I mean, you could actually, the Chevy Trax is it that an electric now? I think that's already down at 30,000 or below starting before incentives, I believe. So there are moves, as you started to say, Jay, moving towards smaller and more affordable versions of vehicles as the luxury ones are selling out and there's nobody else to buy them. That's one simplistic answer to that.
Yeah, and GM's first, you know, it was a marketing flop. Putting the Chevy Bolt as the first electric vehicle was just dumb in retrospect. Easy to say after the fact, but not that hard to figure out, actually. You know?
And it's making a comeback.
Yeah, we'll see.
It is. There's a redesigned one ready to go, and it may be in production. So the sales dropped way off back in the days you mentioned earlier, 2018, 2020. And nobody wanted to sell them. And you drove one. I think I may have driven one. And we thought they were great. And they have sort of slowly crawled back into GM's radar as being something that they should put back on the road for people to buy. And I'm pretty sure I'm correct in that, and you can fact check it later on. But the Bolt is back, or almost back, to be bought by people. And I know people who have them like them or love them.
They're great. I saw one zipping by yesterday right by my house.
Let's switch to VW, which you brought up a lot earlier. The ID4 is still their only all-electric production, except for the Buzz, the van, which is actually getting a lot of attention because of it. The buzz is all about it. They were going to bring an ID7 in, and they have canceled the introduction of the ID7 in the United States market, at least for the coming year, two or three maybe. So I'm not sure exactly what's prompting that from VW, but...
VW has a big problem with their electric vehicles in the U.S. First of all, VW has a big problem in the U.S., period.
Are we including Porsche in that or not?
What's that?
And Audi? Because VW
owns... No, VW
owns
only as a brand, not the company. I think Audi is much better positioned. Volkswagen just doesn't seem to be able... They can't sell high-end vehicles, which is why they don't sell the newer version of the Touareg, for instance, because nobody's going to buy a $75,000 Volkswagen SUV. They'll go and buy an Audi or a Porsche.
Correct.
Same vehicle. So they came out a few years ago with the Atlas, which is a U.S. market only vehicle. And
SUV,
you go down the lineup, and you have less and less vehicles in the Volkswagen lineup. And their electric vehicles just don't have the required range for the U.S. market. I know people who have ID4s who live in our neck of the woods, in our tri-state corner, and they don't take their ID4 to go to New York City because they don't think they can make it and come back comfortably
on one charge. Yeah.
So that becomes a problem. I've always said that in many cases, range anxiety is just not justified. But in Volkswagen case, 200 miles is just not enough for your
a round trip to Boston or New York.
Yeah, I mean, and I think for like a Chevy Bolt or a small vehicle, it's fine. Your run around town vehicle, it's fine, but not if that's your cruising vehicle or your traveling vehicle.
No. So you can buy a Mini Cooper and you can buy a Fiat 500e, both of which come in electric. The Mini Cooper comes in a plug-in electric. And be perfectly happy with those cars for doing exactly what you just said, driving on a daily basis, let's say, less than 200 miles. I'm not sure the Fiat 500e can go even 120 miles round trip, but that would be a real short commuter car for people, short distance commuter car for people.
So let me I've been wanting to talk about a little bit more about the car buying websites. And let me transition to that by mentioning one last electric vehicle, and I talked about it with you earlier today too. The
Mercedes.
The top of the line EQS Mercedes. It's a luxury car. It rides like an S-Class Mercedes, pneumatic suspension. It's just a wonderful car.
New, it costs?
$120,000.
And
you can go now, and I believe I've sent you links of that.
You did.
You can go buy an EQS, a 2023, a two-year-old car with under 10,000 miles for less than half that price, which is just, it's bargain price.
Yep.
And so I was looking at that, and I looked at, I found those cars through, one of the car buying websites. I think it was Car Gurus in this case.
I believe it was.
So that's, those cars are a great deal. And I only know of one in our tri-state corner, which was bought new, by the way. I have not seen any others.
Legendary used car prices for all electric vehicles are out there for all to find. Priuses used to be like that same differential between new and used, or maybe not quite 50% off. But a good way to get a good electric car would be to go look for a used vehicle. And as you just noted, there is that Mercedes EQ, whatever it is, model that is available, at least in a couple places, for that kind of price discount. And the car and you said it had only 10,000 miles on it. It's brand new. It's not even, it's barely broken in.
Yep.
And that is one way to go and do buy a good electric car, a high-end electric car, that may be on the market for resale.
Oh, and by the way, the range on those cars, they're rated for 300 miles. But yep. Mercedes tends, I read through reviews, owner reviews, and owners are getting 320 to 360
right,
miles
exactly.
range day in, day out. So it's a great vehicle. The looks is a little, some people like it, some people don't. But, hey, that's all in the eye of the beholder, right? Beauty.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit more about those car websites. And, again, Car Gurus, Cars.com, Auto Trader, Kelly Blue Book, KBB.com. What else? Edmunds.
Edmund does it.
Auto
right.
Trader. I forget which ones I have not mentioned.
You mentioned those already, so stop.
So those are all websites that are, if you're in the market for buying a vehicle, whether it's new or used, all of those sites pretty much have the same database of cars, and pretty much every vehicle that's available for sale is going to be on those websites.
Jay, can I interrupt you? Are many of those cars located at possibly manufacturers' dealerships, or are they all independently owned, do you think?
No, they're all the dealers have, all the cars are on those sites. So
okay.
Even you can search for new cars. All the new cars except Tesla and maybe Rivian will be on those sites. So instead of going to a dealer and getting hammered with what's on the lot, go and search for the car you might want at the price you want. And then do a search, an extended search, search of 100 miles away, 500 miles away, nationwide, and try to see what cars are around and what price, and then narrow down the search.
Well, for example, when you bought your Touareg, where did you find it?
I found it in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And I flew down. I took a $100 plane ticket. They picked me up at the airport, and I went to the dealership, got in the car, and drove back.
And was it a VW dealership?
It was a VW dealership.
And
yeah.
Did you get a long-term warranty with that, like a pre-owned, certified pre-owned car warranty on that vehicle?
Well, remember, this was Dieselgate times.
Dieselgate was a VW, though.
Yeah, and I kind of gambled a little bit on that. It was not sold. It should have been at the time. It should have been a certified pre-owned with all the extended warranties, and it wasn't. It was just a used vehicle. And they were kind of dodging my questions when it came to that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
but,
all right.
You know, within a few months of having it, I got the letters from Volkswagen. And in the end, they gave me a lot of money to compensate
right.
me for my, heartbreak, finding out that my diesel polluted more than was intended to, or that it Volkswagen had claimed that it did. So, you know, I did all right with the warranty, and a few things were covered under that Dieselgate warranty.
Right. Well, just for our listeners' benefit, when you do our buying cars, we talked a little bit about warranties on a previous show. The certified pre-owned warranties of some cars, manufacturers' cars, can be a big boon to suggest that you do look for a used car at a dealership that manufactures it, as opposed to just any old used car dealer on the street, because they are only bound by state laws to give you a warranty at what the state declares is a minimum requirement for buying a used car in their in the state, which is usually, what, 90 days or 3,000 miles maybe. And then you're on your own for anything that breaks down after that. So that's it on the warranty discussion for this particular show.
So I think we have a little time, not much, but to discuss safety
yes,
issues.
Of weight of cars and safety.
And I just wanted to bring up the I saw a couple articles on the same subject. So there's been a study that came out recently, and maybe more than one, about the correlation between
weight,
the chances of surviving a crash in and the weight of the vehicle,
as well as the size
and
of the vehicle.
It has been thought for a long time that the heavier the vehicle, you know, the better your chances of survival were in case of a bad crash. And that is true, or that was true.
And can be true in certain instances.
It is still true, but now it is. The study determined that there is a point in which weight does not
necessarily guarantee safety.
Correct. That is, the thought before was, okay, so if you are in a pickup truck or a Chevy Suburban and you crash into a small car, your chances of survival are good, but the chances of the person getting killed in the
small
little car were also greater. So, you know, you could be selfish and say, okay, I want to protect my little kiddies and put them all in the Suburban, and that way they're going to be protected, and I can, you know, run over anything on the roads, and I'll come out ahead. And that was kind of the thinking. Now, it seems to be they've pegged the weight at like 4,000 pounds. Over 4,000 pounds, there's not a net gain of how do I explain this?
Well, I'd like to modify that a little bit. Maybe we should take away the word dying to just adding injury potential in the different sizes.
Well, because
you've got airbags in all cars now. And you've got dashboard airbags, you've got side curtain airbags, you may or may not have a steering wheel airbag.
Okay.
And if they go off, you may not die, but you still could be injured.
Okay, so here, I'm glad you bring this up, because that was the conclusion of the study, is that with all the added technology in new cars, you know, your survival rate or your risk of injuries has gone down significantly relative to what it was a few years ago. And even small, lighter cars are much, much safer than they were 20, 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago.
Correct.
So bottom line is, you don't necessarily have to drive a Suburban to
survive.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, it's also happened, is that the bodies of the cars have become much more rigid and stronger, which is noticeable in the side pillar thicknesses and front pillars and windshield pillars, side pillars and all that, which tends to more obliterate some of your view that you now have back, because you've got sensors in the car that let you know when cars are coming up on your rear and or passing you on your left side, so that these thick pillars do not impinge on the visibility, except when you do turn your neck around to look at things.
Hey, so one quick note, and I think we're going to be pretty much
we'll let Mike chime in here.
I forget if I mentioned that I bought a dash cam a few weeks ago.
Oh, you did? No, you haven't mentioned that.
Oh, it was a streamer deal at a local auto parts store, and so I will install that, and then
report on it, because you can record, and save or erase trips and various other driving maneuvers on those.
We're
going to
start
cams,
a YouTube
correct?
Channel with my. We're going to start a YouTube channel with my comments.
Okay.
No, I'm being facetious. So, anyway.
So we've had a couple of recent snowstorms since the last show. Any new driving tips that you want to bring up about driving in those conditions? And did you experience conditions which brought can bring to our listeners some things to think about?
It would be considered if people actually brushed off the snow off their car before getting on the highway.
Oh, yes. Bring that up, Jay, about flying snow.
Well, that's pretty much all there is to say. You know, people.
Except that we should drive further away as opposed to doing the Jay method of just when you see it fly, get in another lane before it gets to you.
Pass them. Get in front.
Okay.
You're always better having the dangers in back of you.
That's true.
Okay. That's my safety tip of the week, but take that.
Well, it is, and as you said on an earlier discussion before we did the show, you were watching a lot of snow flying off roofs of cars on when you're going 60 or 70 or 80 miles an hour, which is really when they detach from the roofs and can really go distance-wise through the air before they land, hopefully not on your windshield or your hood of your car, but on the ground below it first.
Well, and that's going to about do it.
Okay, well, to our listeners, until next time, we are Car Keys with Mike, Jay, and Robin.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.